the Chacham, or rabbi, the famous Spanish-Portuguese synagogue in London, was expected to preach every other Sabbath. This itself was by way of an innovation, a reform, because in the traditional synagogue, the Rav would speak only twice each year. Once on the Sabbath during the High Holy Days and Shabbat Teshuvah, Sabbath of repentance, and once on the Sabbath preceding the Passover, Shabbat HaGadol, the Great Sabbath. And on a particular Sabbath morning in the year 1701, the Chacham David Nieto spoke to his congregation. His theme was of God and of faith. And surprisingly, it ignited a long and sometimes acrimonious controversy. David Nieto chose as his text that morning two verses from Psalm 147. Sing unto the Lord words of thanksgiving. Sing praises upon the harp unto our God. For he covereth the heavens with the clouds. He prepareth the rain for the earth. He causeth the mountains to spring with the grass. David Nieto spoke of the careful balance between the natural order of things in life, between growing and living. He drew a picture for his congregation of a God-glowing earth, bright and alive, aflame with the divine. He tried to show them how all was so carefully ordered for the sake of God's created things. Well, the mystery deepens. What is there in a sermon which seeks to polish for the congregation their vision of God? What is there in such a sermon to which anyone can take exception, much less which can be the focus of a rather ugly debate? Nieto really, that morning, did nothing more than to brighten the poetic feeling which has been endemic in man since man has had consciousness, of a sense sublime, of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean, the living air, the blue sky, and in the minds of man. But Nieto could call to his support in defense of his teaching far more than the instinctive poetic feeling of man, that there is something deeper interfused into the world than matter itself. The world reflects the imprint and the wisdom of God. Nieto spoke within the biblical tradition. Our Bible often suggests that God can and is to be seen in the familiar objects all about us. How manifold are thy works, O Lord! In wisdom hast thou created them all. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. The rabbis took as a symbol of this vision of God in the familiar the parable of the burning bush. You recall that when Moses first fled from Egypt, he went out for a while to live in the wilderness of Midian. And there one day he chanced upon God. Where? B'labat esh mitoch hasneh. In a brilliance, in a flame from the midst of a thorn bush. Ba'asneh einena ukal. But the bush itself was not cindered, it was not reduced, it was really not a that fire at all. See. See if you have only the eyes with which to see the imprint of God, the brilliance of God, and the whole natural order of things. The Bedouin passed this scrub as he might any of the other thousands of bushes which were part of his daily environment, and he saw them not. We do not see the familiar. And an artist might have passed this little thorn bush and have noticed the careful interplay of light and shadow. But a man who is a search for God, a man who is alive to the creative beauty of the universe, sees this lowly growing thing, this briar bush, and he sees in it the flame of God's creative beauty and wisdom, God itself. Heavens declare the glory of God, and the earth reveals his handiwork. Now, preachers have in every generation spoken to their congregation of the God who is to be seen through the familiar word of our environment, because most of us tend to look for God in the bizarre, the unusual, in the miracle. We hear God in the clap of thunder. We see God in the shattering bolt of lightning. We know God if the seas are parted or if a God is Christ God is somehow resurrected into the heavens. But what happens to our faith if, as we stand at Lourdes or are under the tent of the faith healer, we recognize not the hand of God but the projections of human psychology, self-hypnosis and will fulfillment and the like? Is there no other way of God but through the unusual and the miracle? Heavens declare the glory of God. The earth reveals his handiwork. What was it then that one Joseph Tsarfati, a member of Nieto's congregation, could take exception to? Why did he become so exercised with this simple exercise in God's seeing? Sarfati comes down to us through history as a cantankerous and belligerent individual. He's one of those bulldog people who simply likes a fight. And yet even the belligerent man needs an issue, some battleground in which to take a stand. What he did was to accuse Nieto of preaching the doctrines of Spinoza. 40 years before in Amsterdam, the Mahamad, the Jewish Council of Amsterdam, had excommunicated the Lensman thinker, Baruch Spinoza. It was not that Spinoza denied God. Quite the contrary, he affirmed that God was the ground of the whole universe itself, in and of all things. Rather, that Spinoza taught a doctrine of God which denied to God personality, care and concern for the individual. Spinoza would have agreed with the teaching, heavens declare the glory of God and the earth reveals his handiwork. But he denied the teaching of the rabbis, know what is above thee, a seeing eye, hearing ear, and all thy deeds written in the book. God was creator and creating the universe itself. Briefly put, Spinoza taught a pantheism. He equated God and nature and the natural order of things. God gave man life and the world in which he lives, but he has since then cut man off, and man must make do as best he can. These teachings bring into suspicion the traditional religious affirmations of the virtue of prayer, of the possibility of revelation, of the occurrence of miracles, of the promise of some afterlife judgment, reward, and punishment. And most of all, they bring into suspicion the promise that God is the Redeemer, that he will send a Messiah, that he will somehow right the wrongs of this world in a messianic and a miraculous and magical fashion. Now, many of the members of the Eto's congregation were the sons and the grandsons of those who had excommunicated Spinoza. Excommunication of Spinoza is not one of the grand and glorious moments in our Jewish history, to be sure. Indeed, it is one of the few black marks on our escutcheon, which for our history is relatively clear. Heresy hunting, censorship, book burning. And there is some indication that the Jewish community of Amsterdam acted only under pressure from the church, whose Christ myth was far more radically challenged by Spinoza's teachings, really, than the Jewish vision of the one God who cannot be figured or seen directly. Be that as it may, Spinoza stood for a radical attack upon the religious structure. Sarfati accused Nieto of preaching a doctrine which attacked these religious sensitivities. He was wrong. Nieto had no such purpose. This was not his world, his way of looking at things. And when the dispute was finally submitted to the most venerated sage of the day, one Zvi Hirsch Ashkenazi of Germany, Ashkenazi not only found nothing exceptional in Nieto's sermons, but he praised him warmly. He reminded the congregation in London of the old Talmudic teaching that God has set his seal upon each and every creative thing, that if man has only the eyes with which to see, not only the object, but into the objects, he will see there a reflection. God. What caused Nieto to preach that sermon that day? Nieto had serious purpose. He sought to remind his congregation, God is the ground of all being, here always, near always. But even if their great hopes and expectations of God's deliverance are delayed, God is, God remains, God can be known. To understand Nieto's purpose, allow me to review for a moment the history of the day. The 17th century was a long nightmare. It was an age of bloodshed and murder, of exile, of the long road of suffering. There was little relief, if any, for Jewish communities anywhere. And as deliverance was long delayed, men turned more and more to all manner of pious fancy. They began to look into the letters of the biblical text and to add up the numerical values of the letters and try and predict from certain texts the day, the year, on which the Messiah would come. Some claimed he would come in the year 1648. Others argued for the year 1666. Be that as it may, men and women who should have known better, stable, mature people, became convinced that the coming of the Messiah was near at hand, that they would be redeemed from the depth of their degradation. And there arose at around mid-century a young ascetic, a young pious man of fiery eye and demanding charismatic personality who proclaimed himself the Messiah and who won to his side all manner of community and of individual, the rich and the poor. They flocked to him. He married symbolically the Torah. He took the Torah as his bride. He went to Jerusalem and he proclaimed that yet a few months and God's deliverance would be at hand. And the word that Shabbatai Tzvi was the Messiah went out through the length and breadth of the Jewish communities of Europe. And many of the stable, the scholarly, the wealthy, the mature, left off their businesses and their profession, packed up their families and their baggage and set out along the long road to the Holy Land to be there in the month of redemption, take part in this glorious deliverance. Shabtai Tzvi was unmasked. He was apprehended by the Turks, imprisoned, given the choice ultimately between conversion to Islam and death, and he chose conversion. But all manner of men were compromised by this teaching, and prophets went out. Every Christ has his Paul. And Shabtai Tzvi had any number of men who continued to come to the various communities and to assure them that Shabtai Tzvi's only was in hiding. The time was not yet propitious, yet the time was near, and he would show himself again. And the flames of hope were fanned high, only again and again to be bitter. The people were again and again bitterly disappointed. This was Nieto's world. His own predecessor in the pulpit in London had been a Sabbatarian. Nieto knew that those whose hopes had been extravagantly high, once they lost all reason for hope, often turned bitterly against their faith and converted to Islam or to Christianity, and worse than this, turned in bitterness against the people of the faith and acted as informers and denouncers to the government and to the church, making all manner of false accusations against the Jew. And so that Saturday morning he sought to remind his congregation of what God truly is, where God truly can be known, that he is, even though the salvation is delayed, that men ought not to concern themselves primarily with the other dimension of God. God's wisdom, the time in his wisdom when he will come to free man from his suffering. Rather, let them concentrate on the elemental religious search for God, the God who is to be found in and near, who surrounds us always. And I too confess a need very much like Nieto's. I too feel that many in our generation have an image of God which insists on the miraculous, on the magician, on the wizard qualities of the divine, which when God fails in this hope of ours, leads us to a denial of faith. How often when someone says to me, "Rabbi, I no longer believe in God," or I do not believe in God," and we pursue the conversation further, I find that I agree with him. I too do not believe in his image of God. Neither does Judaism. "Rabbi, I don't believe in God. I simply can't convince myself that there is a cosmic Godfather out there who murmurs sweet, soft things to me whenever my life becomes shadowed, whose arm is ready to protect me when life turns against me. There has been too much evil and hurt in our world for me to believe that such a God exists." I agree with you, and so does Judaism. "Ein lo dmut haguf, ein o guf." God has neither human form nor human characteristic. What was it Isaiah said? "El mi tadam yuniel," to whom will you liken God? God is not a celestial magician. God, you cannot project your grandfather, who was always so generous and so kind and so supportive to you, onto the heavens and assume that he is there, your God. "And me to dam uniel," to whom will you liken God? Maimonides spent a lifetime trying to convince his generation that they had no right to assume that God was their alter ego, that God was their father imprinted in the heaven. God's ways are not our ways, and God's thoughts are not our thoughts. Just as the heavens are high above the earth, so high are his ways above our ways and his thoughts above our thoughts. God is in, near, and all about. But God is not some image of one near and precious to us, given celestial proportions, out there, someplace in the heavens. Rabbi, I do not believe in God. I do not believe in a God who plays favorites, who prefers the white man to the black man, the American to the Russian, the Jew to the Christian. I do not believe in God. But I don't believe in such a God either. Neither does Judaism. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us all? God is creator, and whom did he create? One man and one woman from whom all are descended. God knows no favorites. Only human arrogance assumes that God plays favorites. Indeed, it is rarely the convinced religious person who assumes that God is on his side, that God will march out into battle for him against his enemy, even though God has created the enemy, the man, the woman, the child, from the other border. It is not the clerics of our nation, nor the congregations of our nation who are insisting that our public buildings have little white banners underneath the flag which say, "Under God." It is our super patriotic organizations, those who are more chauvinist than faithful. Men have assumed that God has preference, but God has none. Rabbi, I cannot believe in God. I cannot believe in a God who is nothing more than a starter button, a logical necessity, the only possible explanation of how all this started. Well, neither can I, neither does Judaism. What have we achieved by pushing mystery one step further back? What have we achieved by saying, "I will call the mystery which is the beginning of time God, and by that I have solved the mystery"? God is, and God will be for I. In lo reshit vein lo tachlit, he is neither beginning nor end. He is always creator and creating. A philosopher's God is simply a philosophic necessity. He has no relationship to God as God is. God was and is and will be for I. What am I saying? Simply this. When we search for God, we need to know for whom we are searching. If you search for a power in the universe whose sole purpose is to right your wrongs, to hear your prayers, to undo your suffering, to assure you that your world as you know it is right and good, you will not find God. And if you search for a God who will justify all your prejudices, who assure you that you are descendant of the best, that you belong to the best, that you are numbered among the best, God is indeed a reflex of your own privilege, you will not find God. And if you assume that God is only a necessary postulate of thought, an argument required to explain what we yet cannot explain, if you assume that God is a constantly shrinking mass of ignorance, you will not find God. Each of these searches is pointless. It leads nowhere. A rabbi, build me a faith. Where will I find God? The heavens declare the glory of God. The earth reveals his handiwork. Learn to see. Learn to see not only the objects before you, but what these objects are into their heart. Not only this room, its brick and its stone and its architectural beauty, but its roots in time. How this sanctuary is the last of the unfoldings of the human spirit which have created civilization, which have sought to establish God's will upon earth. Use your eyes to see. The rain is not wetness, it is the refreshment, the refructifying of the earth. The clouds are not grayness, They are the bearers of this refreshment. The earth is not a sodden mass. It is a source of growth and of life. See into the source of things. You will see God. Rabbi, build me a faith. A Roman once asked one of our ancient scholars how it was that the Caesar of Caesars, God, chose to reveal himself in a lowly thorn bush. It's beneath his dignity. He should have chosen the mountaintop or some great Roman forum. Why a lonely, lowly briar bush in a God-forsaken part of the wilderness of the world? The rabbi answered, God chose that thorn bush to make clear to man that there is no place upon earth where he is not. God is in all. This is a God-glowing earth. There is a brightness in all that surrounds us if we have only the eyes with which to see. We are only willing to forget the familiar and the routine denotation of these objects and to see them as statements of God's creative wisdom, or of man's deliberate ascent into civilization, or of man's leap into hope. Allow civilization to be built. Rabbi, build me a faith. But first, erase. Erase from your minds all your assumptions of the magician God, the wizard God, the celestial Godfather, the God who is your particular protector, the God who is the guarantor that what you believe to be right is actually right. And then simply walk. Walk out of this sanctuary and into the world. Look at it. Look at it with fresh eyes. See how it is all a carefully constructed, most intricate design. How each and every object in this world has its role to play. How all is intricately, fearfully, wonderfully made. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in the netherworld, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there would thy hand lead me, and thy right hand would guide me. And if I say, surely the darkness shall envelop me, and the light about me shall be dark, even the darkness is not too dark for thee. The darkness is even as the light. Rabbi, build me a faith. Let your eyes, and your sense of the beautiful, and your sense of the wondrous, and your awareness of magnificence, and your humility beyond before a power which is mightier and wiser than you yourself, let these be the keys to your faith. And as you search and as you see, so will you find. Amen.